into election month, and some people are very excited about this, especially the politicians. You know, it's their time to shine. Mm. For most of us in South Africa, it appears people are kind of meh about the election. Mm. Only 27 million registered to vote. Most of those old people. But today we're going to talk to someone who is a new first-time voter. Very, very exciting. By the way, Democracy 101 is powered by the Podcast Party, and you can check out podcastparty.co.za for a whole lot of other great shows, including some old favorites like the T-Health Show. We had Dr. Mark on just the other day. The Brain and Brand Show with Timothy Maurice. Mm-hmm. And Jack's other show, which he does without me. He doesn't need me there. The Middle Child Talks.
Yeah. And an episode is being released today, actually. I had an interesting conversation on Ernst van Zyl from AfriForum.
Oh, really? Mm. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to talk to a first-time voter. And as part of Democracy 101, we try to figure out what people are interested in, what they need to know, what they want to know, what they don't already know around democracy. And, you know, we use that word like it's some kind of hallowed, spectacular, amazing, godly, sacred thing. Mm. It's just a form of government.
Yeah.
But like any form of government, it can be complicated, not only by the people who hold office in that government, by the structures and the various institutions which are created as part of that government. But also, it sometimes runs well, sometimes runs very poorly. Mm-hmm. I think we've got examples of both in the history of South Africa. We were talking about filling in forms and licenses for vehicles and all that kind of thing, which are just a disaster at the moment. But today we're going to focus with a first-time voter on what democracy means to young people. I mentioned just the other day how frustrated I was that so few young people have registered to vote. And hopefully, although I'm not going to make it his responsibility to represent everyone under the age of 21 and who is of eligible age to vote today, but Otsile Nkadimeng is our guest, and Otsile is a first-time voter. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys had a very warm reception.
Thank you, man. Unfortunately, this room is not warm. Yeah. You will freeze your balls off in this room.
Yeah.
So, Otsile, it's your first time to vote in this election. Are you excited about it? Are you registered? Are you one of those people who's ready to go and make your mark? And do you care about democracy?
Well, I am registered to vote. As to who I'll vote for on election day, that's still yet to be decided. I think like a lot of people my age who are going to be voting, I'm probably going to make my decision a few hours before. I am doing the research. I'm looking through the manifestos.
You're not just going to throw a dart at a dartboard.
Nah. It's more of a question of who can I trust, you know, because I read through the manifestos. More or less the parties are promising things that are similar within the same family. It's just a question of a leader I can put the X next to and believe that them and the people I'm sending there.
But you are registered. So, I mean, I'm not going to interrogate who you're going to vote for yet, because as you say, you may still have, and you have lots of time to make up your mind. It's a whole month.
Yeah.
But you are registered, which is already the first step. I know way, way more young people who are not registered to vote and couldn't care less. What do you think's going on there?
I always make the case for at least people my age, born in 2004. You know, for them, it's a very complex analysis, democracy and elections. You know, they don't necessarily have an affinity to a country that works. You know, we've only come of age in an era of politics where South Africa is non-functional. For them, political leadership is not useful at all. These people are not known for doing anything.
So what, they just don't take any of it seriously? They're like, this is not an important thing for me to be participating in.
Yeah, they don't feel that there's any space for them to buy in, any system for them to buy into, to believe that they can get something done for them. I mean, people my age have grown up seeing Gift of the Givers doing more work than our local municipal leaders or ward councillors, you know. So I think that sort of frames their more or less lack of interest, I'd say, in not voting. I mean, I engage with people my age. I've been trying to get them to register to vote. It's a very tough process because you're fighting what's been a knowledge of politics that's not working at all.
Right.
And I mean, I always say to people, you have to vote with the idea that you know where you're going to,
it's like,
where you're going to go 5 years from now.
The way you're describing it, it's like, you know, why would you line up at the tuck shop that just gives you shit sandwiches?
Yeah. Mm.
Is that kind of, I mean, I'm being very puerile, but I mean, we just did some rap lyrics. So, I'm relating it to really base ideas here.
Mm-hmm. It's like picking the kid who never did their homework, never paid attention in class.
Mm.
Those are the only people that are available now, and you have to make them in charge of the whole thing. It's like you get on a plane and they're your pilot. You want to get off that plane. You want to grab your shit. You want to get off.
Yeah.
That's what we're dealing with in this election now. That's how I think my generation sees it, majority.
You know,
them.
Earlier on you said you're looking for someone you can trust. I don't think that person exists, but that's just my opinion, right?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we overlook the fact that, as you said, you were born in 2004. From 2004 up until now, I don't think we can blame young people for being so despondent and not really wanting to participate in the electoral process. That makes sense to me. My question then becomes, what solutions can we come up with? or are you guys thinking that, you know, you'll just figure it out, you'll wing it?
It's sort of a mix of trying to get the best of us to put our hands up and actually be available to run in elections. So I think from 26 onwards, you're going to see a much younger demographic coming forward, because I think presently we understand that if we're not the ones that get involved and do something, we're not going to necessarily see that change.
Right.
And it's also a mix of, I mean, yeah, we're building the plane as we're flying. I think it's a mix of those two things.
Yeah, I'm worried that you guys aren't even participating. And like, it bothers me only because it's going to be your problem eventually.
Yeah,
like it's fine for everybody to be, oh, well, young people, I understand they're despondent. And you've explained it, which I'm grateful for, because otherwise we'd sit here for another week saying, what is wrong with these young people?
Yeah.
Like, you've explained it, and your explanation is not stupid. And I appreciate that. But I really think taking responsibility is like the easiest thing here. It's like one, maybe an hour in a queue at most. To just go and have your say, and it shouldn't be this complicated. It's like, we're not asking you to go into military service for 3 years. You know, it's not like we're asking you to enroll for a degree that you really don't want to do, and you have to spend years of your life putting in this effort. This is so easy. And you're the only one who's registered that I've met between the ages of 18 and 21.
Wow.
So your generation is not doing a good job of showing us why we should even think about them. We should just carry on making policies with no regard for young people.
I mean, I'd say we're engaging in the most unconventional forms. I mean, you go to protests, you go to civic spaces, nonprofits. Majority of them are led by young people, organized by young people. You go to policy consultations with, you know, I do work in climate. So you go to policy consultations with the Presidential Climate Commission. When we're talking about money for the just transition, it's young people that are there spearheading a more ambitious way of getting to the transition. So we're engaging in unconventional ways. I think politics, I mean, it's very nuanced with politics. It's a mix of, we don't trust the leaders. It's also a mix of, I mean, positions are being gatekept. I mean, like you said, old ass people are holding positions in power right now. Mm. They were relatively young when they came in 94. They got so comfortable, they don't want to move from their chairs. And they give young people within their, I'd like to say, their atmosphere, little positions here and there where they can just go and be happy there for a few months and then move them here, move them there, but ultimately not give them the opportunity to be in prominent positions of leadership. So it's also a thing of those who have the power to actually create spaces for young people to be in spaces of influence aren't doing it. So that's also another contributor.
So you do quite a bit.
Yeah.
You are an active young person who's trying to bring about some change. Are you an anomaly? Are you the exception, or are you the rule?
Yeah, because as Yonder says in the comments here, he's like, I'm so impressed with this guy. I thought everybody his age couldn't read.
It's very exhausting being this way. Let me put it this way. I went to an all-boys school, JP High School for Boys. Shout out to all the JP old boys watching.
Yeah.
All
right.
I was...
I'm a kids boy. I mean, it is what it is. I'm sorry.
Come on.
Hey.
We're just like a few kilometers. You are so close to making the right decision.
No.
So close.
Nobody cares about this at all.
Anyway. I put it to you this way. I was in matric last year. I was the weird kid at school who cared about politics and was the captain of the debating society. So I'd like to say I'm like a minority in my group that is active in this way.
Well, that's why you're on the show. But, I mean, if we wanted the dumb kid who's going to embarrass himself, we wouldn't have wanted to have him on the show. We wanted you because you make sense. Clearly, you have thought about these things. But I think Jack's right. You could be the anomaly. You could be the one who is the exception to the rule rather than the rule.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that. It's multiple things.
So
it's
then let's ignore the rest of the people your age. We just ignore them because clearly they're not willing to participate. And therefore, we can write them off.
But I still need to reach out to them. I mean, think about it this way. I'm currently occupied right now with trying to get them to pretty much buy into the system regardless of how hopeless it looks.
Okay.
Because ultimately, it is these next 5 years, economically speaking, that will determine the next 15 years of South Africa's growth, the next 15 years where we will be geopolitically, macroeconomically. And it's in that space, in that environment, that I'll have to begin building my life, buying a home, buying a car, starting a family, something that will determine the rest of my life, you know?
Sure.
And so I need to get them to buy into this because ultimately they'll also be doing the same thing. And so it's finding the avenue from which to do that. That's really where I'm preoccupied.
So let's just digress quickly because you already mentioned it, but you are involved in a climate network called the Sundial Movement. Mm-hmm. Now, whenever I hear people talking about climate, I'm like, oh God, this is like such a nothing. It's such a non-starter. It's like you see these climate protesters all over Europe and North America, and they're the most privileged kids in the world who have nothing to worry about, and they're trying to find their struggle. And I'm like, honestly, there are parts of the world like China and India and Russia and most parts of Africa where we're burning fossil fuels because we don't have an option. And is climate really a big worry to you? Are you genuinely concerned, or is it just the bandwagon you hopped on? Because it's a good bandwagon. You know, the leaders are paying attention to it because God knows they don't have real things to worry about.
I mean, it's a serious issue. The Pew Research Institute? One of the Pew Research Institute or the Lancet Climate Report estimated that by 2050 we could see up to 1.6 billion climate refugees coming from the global south, which is where we live.
But please, are they climate refugees, or are they just moving to Europe because there are no opportunities in Algeria?
The serious climate refugees. There was a time, you could talk to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman of The Gift of the Givers, he'll tell you about this. There was a time in South Africa where, I think it was in the northwest, or the Free State, where farmers in that area were unable to produce food because of an extreme drought that was hitting that area. Cattle, crops, everything was going down.
This happened throughout history.
Yeah, but
you read about the seven lean years and the seven fat years in Egypt.
Yeah.
During the time of Joseph.
Yeah, but the frequency to which these extreme weather events happen is becoming more and more closer to each other. And the link towards that is the increase of CO2 in our atmosphere and the heating of the planet, greenhouse effect in total. So
okay, but we're not actually putting so much carbon dioxide into the air that it is changing the climate. That's just not true. All the CO2 that all the humans and all the cows and all the chickens and all the things that we need is being created. This is just not true. I've got to get you some good literature because you're smart enough to be persuaded and to persuade other people that this is just like a non-starter. If you're really... Don't get me wrong. What I admire about you is that you are one of those people who clearly is interested and curious about how you can make the world a better place. I don't think that you're being disingenuous about that at all.
You're right.
And I love that. I'm not here to argue with you about climate. But all of this stuff is just it's such low-hanging fruit for somebody who's as clever as you could be making a big difference, and I think you are, in things like politics and trying to get young people to think about that stuff. This climate thing is just like such a non-thing, especially for us. We need all the cheap energy we can get in this country. Mm-hmm. We already have a shortage of energy. We can't keep the lights on.
Yep.
And now we're going to worry about solar panels and wind turbines and hydroelectric dams that we aren't building when we should be burning coal, man. Burn, burn, burn. and drill for oil. Drill, drill, drill.
No, keep it simple. No. If we kept it the way it currently is, I mean, right now we put out 162 million tons of CO2 in the atmosphere.
South Africa does.
No, the globally.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
No, maybe Welkom on its own. Yeah. Maybe Welkom and Middelburg. Imalahleni, the place of coal, right?
Yeah.
But the rest, I don't see that happening.
But like 162 million tons of coal, every single year, is the highest everywhere.
The way.
No, but it's not enough for the plants to take in. I mean, we're talking about excess CO2.
Who are we killing?
We are killing people who live
in
countries.
Which ones? People die mostly of cold, not of heat.
No, people die of the impacts of extreme weather events. Go to KwaZulu-Natal, which has been hit by how many weather events
floods.
In the last... Yeah, floods. Yeah. How many floods in the last 10 years?
How does KwaZulu-Natal solve it?
Not just KwaZulu-Natal, but I'm talking about...
So how does CO2 lead to floods?
Well, CO2... ultimately warms the planet through the greenhouse effect. And what that does is it creates climate imbalances. So those climate imbalances change the effectively, let me put it this way. When the planet is warmer, oceans become warmer. So water
more evaporation.
Vapor, yeah, more mm-hmm. evaporation is collected. Storms are able to collect more bodies of water, meaning that when those bodies of water turn into ultimately what we saw in KwaZulu-Natal, the superstorms, when they hit areas, we see those extreme floods coming in, destroying infrastructure.
The worst flood we've ever had in this glaciers, country was in right? was in Langsburg, in like the Karoo, about, I don't know, 100 years ago or something. And we did not have massive power stations at that stage.
Right.
And there are floods recorded in history. I mean, like Noah's flood, where no one was burning fossil fuels. So, and I mean, even if that's just a nonsense biblical story, there are actual written records which we can rely on from the last 100 years that prove that actually things are less dangerous climate-wise now. Yeah, there are less tornadoes. There are less people dying in floods and fires. There are less people dying of cold and heat than at any other point in our history. It's just nonsense. I think this is something that's been made up by like the countries in the European Union to try and get their... I'm telling you, you can see the evidence of this.
I mean, the studies I read by Nobel-winning scientists, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, people who literally do this for a living and... By the way, literally, if they are wrong on this, they stake their entire reputation on it.
Right.
The data I see is that this is a real phenomenon. The data I see tells me that famines...
Here's death from floods. I mean, this is what I've just been able to pull up now. Right, do you see those lines? Those are deaths from floods. Do you see where they're going? You see where these lines are heading? These lines are going down.
I can pull up similar graphs.
That's only 1995, okay?
Now,
the number of deaths, look where we're at. Low to middle income, very few deaths. High middle income, even less deaths. Global average, down.
But no, okay, so those are impacted by similar.
Do you have your own graph?
I have entire presentations
I'm in the middle of a show and tell right now.
So people that want to see this.
Global surface temperature.
Yeah, this is a direct correlation between the increase of CO2 in the atmosphere and the rise of the planet's overall temperatures.
But
and
don't
how we know
want
that
it
that's
hotter?
True.
We want it hotter.
How hot do you want it, Garrett? Like where farmers aren't able to produce food and we see famines like we saw in Sudan and in Somalia earlier in 2023. People are unable to produce food.
32 is a good temperature.
And 32?
We didn't get there enough this summer. Bring the 32. Listen, personally, that's what I want. And at night, I want to turn on the aircon and burn all those fossil fuels so that I can keep it about 20.
Well, the impact of that ultimately is what we saw in Cape Town.
What is that?
Those were the fires that hit Table Mountain in 2021.
Those were vagrants who set fire to the mountain.
No, Gareth.
What?
Okay, how about the fires that hit New South Wales in Australia? Do you remember those in 2021? Those were caused by incredible heat that was attributed to climate change that the government themselves conceded to.
Okay. I'll tell you why Australia burns, because it's flammable as fuck. Have you seen what kinds of
it's
eucalyptus
it's
trees?
It's hot and dry there. But
everything in Australia burns. Even koala farts are flammable.
You know, but I mean, my question is this.
Yeah.
Are you, the things that you're pointing to now, like the forest fires and all of these things,
mm-hmm.
The alarm bells that you are sounding now, are they because of the frequency of these things or the intensity of them? Because to my understanding,
it's propaganda. Yeah,
I mean, look, I'm not against you at all. I'm just saying. Like, Gareth, as you can tell, is passionate about this.
I
couldn't be bothered.
I'm not even. I'm know, just saying. Like, I know we're going to be fine. None of this climate stuff.
I'm genuinely of the opinion
John,
that we'll
John
be
John Clauser,
fine.
Okay, the guy who won the 2022 Physics Nobel Prize, he says, I can very confidently assert there is no climate emergency. My message is, to young people especially, and I'm trying to put your mind at ease here, because you shouldn't be worrying about the future. You should be excited about the future. We need brilliant minds like yours making the world a positive and better place with your good ideas. These are shit ideas. I'll tell you why.
He says, my message is the planet
is not in peril. CO2 and methane have negligible effects on the climate. The policies governments have been implementing are totally unnecessary. Look him up. John Clauser, 22 Physics Nobel Prize winner. I'm not saying you're in any way stupid, but you're not as clever as him.
The people who I reference are people who are far
like
more...
Like what, Imtiaz Suleiman? He's handing out food and...
Well, he's an example of someone who can speak to the physical impact of climate change on the ground.
No, he's a fundraising NGO.
Then there's John Hansen, there's Friedrich Otto, there's Sylvia Earle, there's Peter Klaus.
I don't know who these
These are renowned climate scientists.
Bjorn Lomborg. You heard of him?
Pierre Lombo.
Bjorn Lomborg.
Bjorn Lombo. No, I haven't heard of
him. You haven't heard of him?
Gentleman.
He's written an incredibly useful, insightful book where he's compared actual data based on what the climate claims are. And he's debunked all of it. Now, you're a smart guy. I'm going to give you this book as a gift. Right? You're 18. Is that right?
2004, I'm 19.
19. You're a hugely impressive 19-year-old man.
Yeah.
Okay? I want people like you to inform the policy of the next generation. Because I'm not going to go and stand for office. You've been meeting the president and all this stuff. Very impressive stuff, which I don't doubt for a second you've earned the right to do. I want to give you better information. Because I think this is such a dumb fight. This is like using your great brain to go and work on Tupperware parties rather than getting out there and doing things that can make the world
better. That actually make a difference.
Like, I think it would be a waste. It would be a waste. It would be like me saying to you, I'd like you to write an essay on talcum powder. That's a waste of your brain. I got things that... let me give you this book. Afterwards, we have another conversation.
All right.
Let's move on from climate.
I was actually going to ask that
but
we do that.
I'd invite Professor Colleen Vogel, who does a lot of climate studies and someone who actually turned me on to this
great
crisis.
Bring her. You bring her with you
speak,
next time.
Yeah, yeah,
and I'll
come
tell
and
you
speak
what,
about
you
this.
Are the first guest I'm going to give an open invitation to. You can come anytime you want. You tell me which day you can make it. You bring whichever of these climate friends of yours you want to bring. I'm happy to have them.
Yeah.
I'll bring some too.
But just as a fact, climate change is real and we should be concerned about
it's real, but
and
it's not
we
important.
Must deal with it. It is a serious thing.
I'm just saying, like, ever since the planet has been here, the climate has been changing in variety
and
of
humans,
ways.
And it's only dangerous for us, and we're not the most important thing here. The planet will be fine.
It will be fine. We're just worried that we won't have a little corner to live in. But anyway, let's change gears.
let's worry more about the potential thermonuclear war in Russia and Ukraine.
There you go.
That could be a lot bigger a problem than a couple of breaths or car farts.
So let's talk about something we all can agree on. Perhaps something like, I don't know, politics.
Yeah, we've got a great record in this country. Right. Agree on politics.
So, dude, you started this really cool thing that's called So You Vote. So We Vote, sorry.
Yeah.
What was the thought process behind that?
So it was started, the idea came up to me with a friend who was a part of Sundial because he believed in climate change back in 2022 in December. We felt that the country was at a place where we needed something that would help young people feel at least incentivized to vote.
Okay.
Something that would help guide young people's votes. We felt that currently the way the whole political process works, it's not made for my generation. These people go on TV, they go on radio, they use formats that my generation, I don't know anyone under 21 that owns a DSTV, honestly.
Okay.
No. So the way politics has been working, the way parties advertise themselves to people, it's made for the older generations. It's not made for us. The way manifestos
are
written.
Where do you want them? On TikTok and on Instagram? And
yeah, social media.
Sure.
I mean, they do it horribly, but the ones who are there, at least they're trying, but they do it horribly. We want them there where we can reach them, on our platforms. Ultimately, they must come to us. because they want our votes. But we also felt that the way manifestos are written, because you need to understand a manifesto, that's the mandate you're giving someone to go govern with. They have to respond to that. The way they're written, it's just not accessible. So we needed to break it down.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Because on the one hand, someone can say, you guys, as a generation, did not put a premium on education. You didn't really care to put in the work. So when a document like a manifesto is put in front of you, you won't be bothered to read the damn thing. Or on the other side, it's just so complicated that even people that do have somewhat of a sound mind can't get through it. Is it a question of your laziness, or is it a question of,
and by the way,
complicated, unnecessarily complicated documents?
And again, Otsile, it's not, this is not something we're expecting you to answer on behalf of all
everyone.
Young
people.
We're just trying to figure it out. And
what's
certainly
what?
In terms of laziness, I don't think this applies to you, but I think it's a good question, because it's always like, but you didn't bring it to us. You didn't bring it on a silver platter, so I didn't have to get up from the couch. And you should put it down in front of me and ask me if I'd like some more, and then maybe I'll consider voting for you.
See.
Like a bit of effort, because, I mean, there are a lot of young people in this country who are just meh.
Yeah.
They don't have any, they can't even get up and learn to spell properly. And now they want to tell the politicians, no, you must come to me and deliver to me on TikTok, because that's the only, I couldn't be bothered. Oh, my arm's so tired. I can't scroll. Oh, can't you just like feed it into my brain directly?
Yeah, and mind you, we're playing devil's advocate. Like there are people like you who are willing to do something about it, but there are others that just want to sit there and have the world
delivered to
them.
Are they the majority or are you?
We're not a homogenous group, so I can't say that this is necessarily the trend for all young people. I mean, it depends on multiple factors. It depends on where you were educated, depends on where you stayed, depends on your economic disposition right now. Mm. Depends on how you interact with politics.
Or just how lazy you might be, as Jack said.
Yeah, but I mean, do we really have the luxury of laziness right now?
Yes, so many people are lazy as hell. Have you seen how many people are just taking drugs and sitting around doing nothing?
I mean, are they unemployed?
Well, I don't know. They're sitting around.
Yeah, probably.
You drive around any of our towns, townships, CBDs, business areas now. You'll see people just sitting around. You people your age. You're not, but they are. You don't have to stand up for them. Just say, yeah, it's true.
I mean, genuinely, I want to believe that there are young people like me who do care in this country, because as much as we're not a homogenous group, there are those who care. When it comes to manifestos, let me actually answer that one before we get to this point.
Good.
I mean, the way they're written is that even an adult who is not by any means a lazy person can open it up, go to the website, try read it.
Boring.
It's more than just boring. Does it give you an indication of day one of governing? This is the issue that lands on their desk. This is how they necessarily respond to it.
Right.
The way we interact with parties is we read the manifestos at So We Vote. We read them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go through them and we say, okay, I'm not getting what this practically means in implementation.
Okay.
So then we contact the parties and we say, here's a document. We've cited all of the things that we want you to give us practical examples of what does this mean in implementation.
Right.
So that we can then translate that into our infographics.
Do they reply to you?
They do. Well, some do. Others were still waiting for. I want to call them out. VF Plus were still waiting for our document. ACDP, MK Party, Action SA, PA. You guys,
well,
you
maybe,
want us
maybe
to cover
the list
you.
Of, maybe
Come
the
on,
list
please.
Is better if you go tell us who did reply.
Oh, mm-hmm. Rise Mzansi, the ANC, the Democratic Alliance, Build One South Africa. We reached out to Zaki Ahmed. We wanted to cover an independent. So he's the first one we've reached out to. They've responded. There's probably others that
I think
knows
I think
more
that's
about that.
That is useful information.
That
because
is very useful information.
Now we can also see which political parties are taking ordinary citizens and especially young people
seriously.
I'm pleased to hear that.
Mm.
That's good. Power to those parties that did get back to you.
Thank you.
So you get all of this information, you put it together, and then you kind of deconstruct it and then give it to the people that I don't know, follow you on Instagram? Or how does So We Vote actually work?
So the vision for it is that we would have networks across schools in South Africa. I'm talking high schools and university institutions. High schools, we want to do civic education work. Universities, we'd also do civic education work, but we also help guide the political discourse there. That was the vision. We don't have any money. We're a bunch of broke first years who just are very good at Canva. That's okay. Pretty much so we vote. If you go to our Instagram, you'll see that we're very good at Canva. but what we do is we just put out the information on channels where we can do it for free. So that's Instagram. We're trying to breach into TikTok. We send them out on Twitter. I'm sorry for the older folk, but we don't do Facebook.
No, that's okay.
That's okay.
But that's where we try to communicate.
I think that is extraordinarily laudable. I think it's really good that there are young people who are actually standing up, mm-hmm. making a difference. Even if you guys are just good on Canva, you're already 100 points ahead of most of the people. As you say, even the adults, older people, who don't read these manifestos. They don't even interrogate any of this stuff.
Not at all.
What matters to you, though, as a voter? Like, what kind of stuff would attract you? You don't have to give us the parties. Yeah. What sort of policies, what sort of positions would make you go, you know what, that I'm in for? And if three or four parties are all agreed on that thing, then I would vote for any one of those three. Mm. What stuff matters to you?
Climate change.
Okay, cool.
The economy. I think the economy is very much up there for a lot of young people because it ultimately...
But what does that mean? Like, when you say the economy, an economy that's growing?
An economy that grows and creates jobs and also is fair to people who are earning more or less a working wage in this country. So people who aren't working just to pay off their debts and then have nothing left at the end of the month. An economy where I can earn something and still have a little bit left after to save up to build
so
a better life
for
myself.
We want prosperity as well.
I want prosperity as well. I want a comprehensive healthcare system in this country. NHI is a great idea in principle. The way it's going to be implemented, I don't think it's going to be implemented very well, but I think that needs to be reworked. Another thing, I think land for me in particular, it's a very big issue for my generation.
Sure.
Land is a very, very big
issue. What about land? Like, because... You know, I mean, we all want to own property. We all want to be on the property ladder. We want to have something to borrow against. We want to know that this is our little piece of the pie that we can make into something, that we can improve, that we can grow food on or whatever.
Yeah.
You probably don't want to grow food, though, because that could add to the climate change problem.
You could grow food in a way that does not contribute to climate change.
Well, wheatgrass.
No.
What are you going to grow? Because most of those crops are going to use quite a lot of fertilizer.
You know what? No,
okay, but land. Yes. So let's just talk about that.
You could do it very, very well. And there's lots of studies on that. Go to Climate Reality Project. You'll see a lot of those.
Okay, let's talk about the land.
Let's talk about the land.
So here's the way I see it. I'll admit, I care for the environment, but I probably would make a piss poor farmer. I'm just not good.
So would I.
I'm not good there. Mm. But I'm talking land in the form of redistribution, especially in urban areas, giving people who don't have access to land in urban areas, who are urban based and probably would not go back to far off rural sites where there's vast amounts of land, access to land opportunities here in urban areas so that they can actually build a foundation. You know, one of the advantages my family has is that when we my family is part of the struggle. My grandfather is part of the struggle. When we returned, he obviously was able to serve the state and he did it damn well back when leaders could actually be trusted.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And because of that, he was able to leave a legacy behind in the form of two homes that now my family can depend on as streams of income that rented out. So that creates economic opportunities within the family, creates access to capital. I think that if more people can have access to something like that, just as an example, I'm speaking from my personal example of how land and ownership of property has been very useful in my specific situation. And if more South Africans could have something like that, a foundation or a legacy to leave behind like that, I think it would be much better. And that's the crux of the argument. Not everyone wants to go and take Oom Piet's farm in some forgotten little town.
I think those sports fields at Jeppe could be quite useful to young people who'd want to have some land to farm.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah.
It's urban. We don't have a lot of space, so we got to take what we can get.
You know,
and you know what we'll do? We'll take Kez's land as well.
Yeah. Why not?
You also went to an old boys school.
I did not.
You didn't?
I went to government, Model C. Nothing fancy there, but I don't have a problem with you guys going to much, much better schools than they are. I think, in fact, it's essential that we up the quality of education across the board.
Yeah.
Because I know that a good education provides us with more otsiles than it does like people who are sitting doing nyaupe in the street. But I am concerned that this land thing, again, just like the climate thing, is there's a lot of bad information out there, and a lot of the stuff is being sold on the basis that it's, you know, it's bound to trigger an emotional response.
Yeah. Mm.
So I looked at this the other day. Back in 1989, we had 120,000 white farmers. Today, there are 32,000. There are 28,000 black farmers. The ANC government and the government is the largest owner of land in this country.
Yeah.
So we need to figure out what to do with that land, for starters. Because a lot of it's just sitting. Obviously, arable land is different from, you know, open. Who wants a huge 3,000 hectares of the Karoo where you can't do anything with it?
Yeah, it's pointless.
So obviously, we've got to look at that too. And we've got to also look at, I mean, I heard someone say the other day, blacks own 4% of the land, which is nonsense. It's just not true.
It couldn't, just numerically speaking, just doesn't make sense.
I mean, if you just in KwaZulu-Natal look at the land that the Ngonyama Trust owns, yeah. I mean, that's more than the government owns in KwaZulu-Natal.
Yep.
And that's not owned by the king. It's meant to be owned by all of the people and managed by the trust. So we've got to look at these things and be sensible about them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't disagree with you. I think if you have land, you have the ability to borrow against something. You have the ability to rent that land out to someone if you don't want to farm it yourself or if you want to let someone else live there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for most people, they just don't even have a toehold on the economy because of this. I think it is an important thing. I also think that, you know, we've got to look at the kind of leaders that we're electing at the moment and stop electing them based on their character, charisma, ability to make a speech, whether we like them or not,
mm-hmm.
and actually do what you're doing, which is to look at the policies. Say them, what's your example here for this? Everything you said, by the way, about the economy, I'm totally on board with too, because if we want to have a country where people can live in a dignified way, they need to have prosperity and growth, job opportunities. And so many young people are also disenchanted and feel completely disconnected from things because they can't get jobs.
Yeah.
If you don't have jobs, how are you meant to have dignity there too? You can't bring home the bacon if you have no bacon.
Yeah. And you certainly can't have any optimism while, you know.
Sure.
It's more than that. It's also just about waking up in the morning and having purpose. I mean, think about people who don't have purpose in the morning when they wake up. What is it that drives them to still be a part of society? You can't have a country where people wake up, millions of people wake up every morning just being.
You know, we are all facing an uphill battle because a lot of us have become, I don't know, for the lack of a better term, very cynical, right?
Yeah.
It seems as if that, I don't know if it's the culture that has been developed because of the political leaders that we've had in this country, where even when something great happens in the country, the first thought that goes through a lot of our minds is, I wonder how they're going to use this to make money off of it somehow, right? I mean, we were talking about these new driver's license cards. Like, the moment I heard that, I was like, there's a Tinderpreneur somewhere in the background ready to make a couple of millions, right? How do you think we could possibly start changing the views of South Africans as far as, you know, the culture of this country is concerned? Like, the bribing of Metro Police officers or police officers themselves, where someone does something criminal against you, and you get that person arrested, their family member shows up with 10,000 rand, all of a sudden the docket is missing. You know, those kind of things. Do you have any opinion about our culture as a country at this point in time?
I think, and I said this on one or two occasions, that corruption that leads to that type of endemic type of mismanagement of the state starts at the top and it trickles down. Because ultimately, when the hammer has to land, the hammer has to come from the top down. So when you see ministers behaving in ways or taking money in ways that are completely unethical, then obviously the person who would have to hold you accountable themselves are compromised. And so then it trickles down like that until the officer you interact with wants a Coca-Cola to let you go. And so therefore, I think that the solution starts with trying to get accountability from the top and then showing that the hammer can land from the top going down. I think that can sort of shock the system. As far as the sense of cynicism goes, I think, you know, when we've seen as much damage as we've seen in the short amount of time we've seen it, I think people become traumatized and conditioned to believe that nothing good can happen anymore. Mm. I think that ultimately you become what your environment creates you. If your environment is one where you're used to constant just destruction, degradation, poverty, mismanagement, corruption, lack of trust or faith in not just your leaders, but your fellow South African.
You're bound to give up.
Then that's bound to be your reaction. But then it falls on those of us who genuinely believe that things can get better to try re-inspire people to think that South Africa can get better. I mean, I speak to people who live in other countries. By far, we are not the worst.
Oh, for sure.
And we still have a lot of room to recover.
I don't expect you to solve all of the problems. That would be, first of all, it would be such a dereliction of duty for us to say to you at 19, okay, here, solve the problems.
Yeah.
But do you have any intention of going into politics? I mean, what are you studying and what would you like to do with your life?
That question follows me everywhere. It's sort of like...
Well, you probably ask it yourself more than anything.
Yeah.
I ask it myself because other people say it to me. Hmm. But I personally currently studying a Bachelor of Commerce in Law because I want to do something business related, but I've always had an affinity to the law. I know there's a lot of law students. Sure. I've heard you on one or two occasions say people should not be studying law in this day and age.
I just think we've got a lot, but you're the kind of mind we might need there.
But I want to go more or less the business route because I think that a lot of businesses in South Africa are going to need more socially minded executives or people in the space there that can bring a lot more CSI, ESG initiatives to grassroots level, help communities on the ground, and actually create a different type. You'll see that a lot of my generation is socialist.
Which is outrageous. I mean, it's so shocking.
There's no red scare here. Let's not red scare.
Why don't all those socialists, as I said yesterday on the show, just all put everything they have into a basket and share it out among themselves as an experiment? If they get that right, they can fiddle with the rest of the country. Don't you think? That's not an impractical thing to start with. From now on, I'm just going to say to socialists, all right, if there are five of you in a room, all of you put everything you have, whatever value, contracts for properties, your car, everything, put it in, and we distribute those equally among you socialists. And then when you get that right, you can tell the rest of us how to live.
The point I was getting to it.
No, you don't think that's a good idea? You think that's a horrible idea?
Listen, you're a politician, whether you like it or not, bro.
I don't have the mandate to speak on their behalf. I don't have the mandate to speak on a lot of people's behalf. But I'll say this. The reason I speak this way about what I want to do with my career is because I think that, particularly in a country like South Africa, we're going to need more leaders in corporate who think the way I do and who can actually navigate these big institutions which have a lot of good, talented people and a lot of resources and access to opportunities to work in the way that I think that we should work. And that is focusing a lot more on community-based issues, not just for the hype, but for the actual impact.
That's not what business is for.
No, business can be for that as well. You know, but there's a concept called conscientious capitalism.
Fair enough. But you do know what business is for.
Yeah, it's for profit, ultimately. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I own shares in companies through easy equities. Why is business suddenly doing what government should do?
Why is business suddenly doing what parents should do?
No.
Why is business suddenly giving mental health classes to people because they've had a traumatic experience? If I start a business, I don't want any of that. I want to be able to make money. I want to pay people properly. That's it. The rest is up to them. I'm not there to sort out all the problems in their lives.
But you need to do that in an environment that is conducive to that type of growth. And
no,
if government is derelict in its duty,
so government
you have to
is
step
derelict
in
its duty. Don't expect the private enterprise then to step in where government is fucked up.
I mean, no, but they are already. I mean, just a few kilometers from where we are, we have Discovery. I see all of these Discovery vans around the country patching up potholes. They see an opportunity there to actually reduce risk for their consumers.
I think they're doing it because they insure people's cars and they're tired of paying out.
So there's a benefit for them to do that. And the overall benefit is that the roads are safer for general South Africans.
So you said ESG. So we're talking environmental, which I understand. We're not going to go there again. And social governance. So what kind of policies do you feel like business should be implementing that they're not, that you as a business leader would be able to bring in and start to make part of what businesses do? Conscientious capitalism. What would you like to see there?
Well, there are businesses that are doing it, but I think that the scale to which it's happening is not significant enough
doing
for
what?
Positive impact. So you look at companies like, let me go with Investec and what they're doing with renewable energy projects. I'm talking community-based renewable energy projects. Those projects are incredibly great. I mean, you get communities that have access to solar, which we won't touch.
No, I think it's great. I've got solar.
Mm. And
I think the more of us can get off the grid, the less of us will give money to Eskom, the less money the government gets out of us. I'm all in favor of that.
Right.
Yeah. I love that idea.
So then you'd also love the just transition, which takes money directly from the funders to entities that will implement it, not touching Eskom's balance sheet. It's a very good policy.
Mm-hmm. I'm in favor.
Yeah, but policies like that, projects like that, that can be increased at scale. So I'm talking communities like a few kilometers from us here in Alexandra, where they are tapping into the grid, one, because there's no service delivery from the state to actually give them access to electricity, not that it would exist even if they brought it there, but opportunity for them to be completely off the grid, gain electricity, and also sell excess energy back to the grid for a profit, a credit.
Gwede Mantash is not going to like you.
Not at all.
He doesn't like me already. what gave you the impression that he liked me at all?
Uncle Gweezy.
He and I are on polar opposites. I mean, he's indicative of a style of politics that is far gone. And his style of governing is just completely inconsistent with the way South Africa is.
And it's so interesting.
He's not awake this early.
He'll be a cabinet minister for another 5 years, assuming his specific faction still maintains authority. Maybe we can get into that later on.
You know, like, I want to understand as you said, young people are attracted to socialism. Why is it that you guys feel that things should be fair?
He didn't say him.
No,
don't say you guys.
Yeah, I'm not sorry. Well, I'm not.
You're going to get me kicked out of boardrooms.
No,
Jack.
I'm sorry. But like at the same time, I'm again, Gareth mentioned it earlier on. We're certainly not asking you to answer for all the young people in this country. But you said it yourself that there is an attraction to socialism.
Yeah.
I want to understand where that comes from. Because if you can point to one country where socialism has actually worked,
Even a little bit.
Yeah, then we can have the conversation. What is it about socialism?
Let's start off by asking, are you one of those people? Because if you are, then you can answer that. Otherwise, we don't have to force him to answer.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah. The thing is, once you said it, like, you know, young people are always telling us that they're triggered and traumatized. That the term socialism triggers and traumatizes me, which is why I want to know what is the attraction?
You know, I'd like to think that the attraction is what you said exactly. We're looking for fairness in a system. And I think that, I mean, though socialism has not succeeded, I think those who are the strongest proponents of it argue that where have we seen in a modern 21st century democracy that's capitalist, have we seen people, the workforce, share in the profits of the company, people's lives get better because of it.
Right here, we created the largest new middle class in South Africa after 1994, largely because we expanded business and the bureaucracy and employed a lot of black people into that who became middle class rather than working class. And there are families who are now the product of that. So here, or you could go to China, because it certainly wasn't communism that took China into a position where they had growth and where they pulled people out of abject poverty. Communism. That was capitalism in places like Shanghai and the manufacturing parts of China, Guangzhou, however you pronounce the place. And then America is the obvious example. The world has been pulled out.
America's not the best.
No, it's not the best.
It's not about being the best.
Good example.
We're talking about examples.
It's a damn sight better than Venezuela or Angola or Cuba or any of these places where people wear Che Guevara t-shirts and think that they're standing up for fairness. There's no those countries that have implemented socialism almost invariably had to do social engineering in order to achieve these things. Mm-hmm. And they've therefore killed many thousands,
millions,
if not millions of people.
Millions of people.
If you're going to defend that on the ground of fairness, then I will speak on behalf of the dead people if you won't and say, that's not fair for them.
At all.
I'm not defending this, but what I'm saying is that, but even in countries like those, I mean, you saw what happened in Chile, where there was a socialist government that was more or less on the pathway to success, but was sabotaged by states like the United States, Henry Kissinger.
Only time I really like
Cuba,
Chile. The only time I really like
Venezuela,
Chile was when
those countries are sabotaged.
The best time for Chile, if you ask me, was when they were throwing people out of helicopters because they were communist.
That is a very under problematic.
Under Pinochet. That was the best time.
That
in fact,
was
I'm
going to
have a bunch of t-shirts made with
Jesus,
like
that was dark.
Yo,
I didn't think we were going to go that route. That was dark. Anyway, listen, bro. Here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like,
I need to answer your question.
Yes. Of all the governing systems that have come to the fore in the history of humanity, what I have seen personally, is that capitalism gives people the best opportunity to make something of themselves.
He knows. That's why he's going into business.
Right?
And he knows so that. He's just saying, he says one thing and does another, which I did that when I was young.
It absolutely blows my mind when I hear someone as articulate as you, and I know you did not use the word socialism out of context. You use that word specifically. It blows my mind that young people in this country firstly think that the world is somehow fair. It's never been for anybody, right?
It's about the fairest it's been is right now.
Right now, right? And secondly, that somehow
because we're burning
socialism,
fossil fuels to make it fair for poor people to have energy. Like, that's why it's fair.
Socialism
Khayelitsha doesn't
isn't
have electricity, neither does Nyanga or Alexandra, so I don't know where the coal we are burning is going.
Those are small parts of a very big world. India and China, who we'll refer to again a number of times in this conversation, are only pulling their populations out of poverty because they can give those people, poor people, energy. And it's working for India. A lot of the smartest people who are coming out of education institutions all over the world are making the biggest difference are coming out of India and China. And they're coming out of there because they can actually keep themselves warm in the winter.
Yep.
And they're doing that by burning that coal that you're so opposed to. But
it's energy.
Let me wrap this up.
It's just creating energy.
Let me wrap this up.
Because now it feels like we're attacking you all of a sudden. We wanted to hear your thoughts.
I have to compliment you. Okay. We did not give you an easy ride this morning.
We
and we're not going to patronize you and treat you like a kid and talk down to you like most people who would try to be friendly and sweet on most mainstream media outlets. Yeah. Give you, pander to you, say to you, oh, you've done so well, you're so clever. We
he's
did say you're clever,
boy.
And
here's
you are.
A naughty badge.
But we gave you a proper go this morning because I actually think you got some homework to do on some of these subjects. There are gaps.
And you've given us a bit of homework to do as well, truth be told.
Full-length answers, then you would get gaps
that's
that are
again,
existing
life's not
there.
Fair. You're not going to get to do that. But you've got to demonstrate to us sufficiently that you're one of those people who's going to make this country a better place.
Yep.
I feel that way. I feel like the things that you've said make me very, very positive and optimistic about the future.
Mm-hmm.
The kinds of involvement that you have in organizations that you are fronting and that you're very much directly a decision maker in, whether I agree with the climate change agenda or any of that stuff, it's completely unimportant. You are doing these things. You're actually making the moves. You're not just sitting and talking. I think that's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And Otsile, I have all the time in the world for you. I said, you have an open invitation. We've never given that to a guest before. Come back anytime you want. Bring people who will argue with us, bring people who will agree with us. Mm-hmm. We're happy to talk to you anytime.
Yeah. I feel like Charlie with the golden ticket now.
You have got to go. Dude, you earned it.
Yeah.
I really thought, okay, we're going to talk about, someone who's going to vote for the first time and he's all excited and he's already decided which party to vote for and he thinks the world is a very easy to understand, simple, uncomplex, binary place. And you didn't. You persuaded me that you've thought about a lot of these things.
Yep.
All I'm saying is I'm going to give you more to think about. Yeah. And hopefully the next time we meet, we can have more arguments because I love this.
Yeah.
I want to argue with people like you.
Thank you.
There are not enough people arguing in this country. We need to argue.
It's like, because some people, they'll pretend like they want to have a genuine discussion, but it's like playing tennis against a curtain.
Yeah.
Like, It does nothing for you. And I think what you have proven in spades is that Number one, there are people in this country that are within your age group that are willing to put in the work, and they're not just sitting at home bitching and moaning and complaining that things are not fair. Mm. And you have genuinely put yourself out there, and as a result, I've got nothing but respect for you.
Thank you.
It's absolutely amazing what you're doing. Like, and for those people that, you know, skipped over that part, they need to check out what you're doing with So We Vote.
Yes.
I think that's an amazing initiative. And the more people that get involved, especially within your age group, we are headed in a direction that will be so much better for all of us.
I just want to say, before we wrap up the show, I see that Dr. Sam Motsuenyane died. Founder of African Bank.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Founder of NAFCOC, along with people like Dr. Richard Maponya, a passionate farmer, a fountain of business wisdom, an incredible South African leader, and someone who most people in this country probably don't know about, but they should. Mm-hmm. So rest in peace, Dr. Sam Motsuenyane. Yeah. And thank you very much, Otsile, for your contribution today.
Thank you.
And nice to have you on the show.
Yes. And on that note, can I just end by saying this?
Go on.
Sure.
To all who are listening and who will be considering in this election who they're going to vote for and are trying to convince people to get more active and to get more engaged, understand or try to get across the message to people that if you're a South African who's born in this country, will live your life in this country, and when you die, you'll be buried in this country, you have the duty to make sure that this country is much better off when you leave than when you entered. Because ultimately, if you're like me, you don't want to spend all of eternity when you're put in the ground, in a shithole. You want to live in a good country. You want to be put in a good place.
You sound like Donald Trump.
And so let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Yep.
I mean, there's no language restrictions here.
No,
it's
of
not
course,
like TV,
yeah.
So
we must give you our own show. Everybody. Thank you so much. Great to have you with us this morning. This Democracy 101 brought to you by the Podcast Party. There's a lot more. You can go over to podcastparty.co.za to find out all about it. And Jack has his own show there too. For all you know, Otsile will have his own by lunchtime today.
Yep.
Lots of things to still do. Lots of people to still talk to. And only a month until we go and vote. So let's do it. Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Cheers.
Whoa. Okay.